I will go ahead and call this meeting to order at 7 o'clock.
Cameron.
Please rise for an invocation led by Ms. Pullis and the flag salute led by Mr. Fuller.
Dear Lord, we ask you to watch over us tonight as we make the decisions that affect the children in our community. We ask a special blessing on all of the families and especially the ones who may be experiencing financial hardship. And dear Lord, please, a special blessing on Mr. Mandela, all of his friends and family. In his name we pray, amen.
Ready, begin.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Roll call, please. Here.
Here.
Mr.
Fuller?
Here.
Mr. Pop?
Here.
Mr. Spence?
Here.
Mr. Leo?
Present.
Mrs. Lathrop
here.
Okay. The first item on our agenda is a student achievement plan for West Covina High School. Mr. Gautreau, I'm assuming, is going to lead this.
Mr. Gautreau, please stand forward.
Come up. Sorry, I didn't hear you.
She doesn't know how to pronounce your name, so she just kind of did it under her breath.
Gautreau.
I apologize. I thought you said you were giving a student achievement award to somebody.
Student achievement plan for the high school.
Well, members, so we're up first, huh? We're ready to do it. Members of the board, members of the cabinet, it's a pleasure to be here to present the student achievement plan for West Covina High School. I'm going to take you through a little of the data from last year, and we'll start you out with the good news.
Do you have copies of this?
Okay.
No packet. By any chance, do you have copies? Did we bring copies or no?
No, I didn't, and I apologize.
Okay.
Shouldn't have assumed anything.
That's all right. Do you have a hard copy?
I have a hard copy, but it's my cheat sheet.
Oh, okay.
I have one hard.
All right. It's all right. He'll let you pass.
I purposely went through this and made real big font.
Go right for it.
So I think we'll be good. If there's something you can't see or can't discern, let me know. Okay, first of all, and we picked the 2005 to 2008 results for the AP exams. This is really exciting. If you look at this in just the last 3 years, from 2005 to 2008, we increased from 220 students taking AP exams to 324 students. That's a 47% increase. That's a marked increase in just a three-year period, a difference of 49 from the prior year. In terms of the total number of AP exams taken, 2005 there were 467. You'll notice every year an increase, a huge increase last year, up to 745 exams taken. That's a 59% increase. Now, typically when you see this kind of quick growth, you'll see the pass rates just tank, because what happens is typically you've got maybe kids that weren't quite prepared and they were rushed into AP level classes. But if you look at this, the number of threes are better, and realize that a 3, 4, and a 5 is considered quote-unquote passing. With a score of 3 or better, most colleges, if not all colleges, will actually give you a waiver on those classes once you get to college. So typically, you'll see your high-level AP students that literally can start college as a sophomore. And when you think about the cost of college and the value of time, that's a huge deal. So anyway, in 2005, 178 students got a 3, 4, or a 5. With this tremendous growth in the amount of exams taken, last year it was up to 374, which is a growth of 110%. So usually you're not going to see that kind of growth in those scores relative to that quick an increase in the amount of exams and the students taking. So we're real excited about that. Obviously, we're going to keep doing better. Okay, in terms of the CASI, another high-stakes exam. If you look from and realize that the scaled score passing is a score of 350 or better. In math, we've increased one percentage point from 2006 up to 82%. Now, this is the sophomores that took it for the first time. Now, in English, from 81% up to 84%. Now, just to put this in perspective, 82% pass rate the first time our kids took the math exam, their sophomore year. L.A. County's average is 70%, so we're 12% ahead of L.A. County. In English, 84%, L.A. County is 72% pass rate. So, again, we're 12% in both math and English. Now, you've got some apples and oranges here. You've got the exit exam, which, as you know, is needed for the kids to pass high school. You've also got the AYP thing hanging out there with No Child Left Behind. So for the AYP, they use a different score. They use a score of 380, and that is considered proficient for AYP purposes. So as you know, in high school, they don't use the STAR results, CST results, like they do in the elementary and the middle school for AYP. They use the exit exam results. So in terms of AYP proficiency, our math was 50.9, which is really, boy, that's 6 percentage points better than 2006. English, it was 55.1, which is approximately 4% better. Now, again, to put this in perspective, in 2007-2008, the feds expected us to be at 37% in math. We're at 50.9%, so we're well above that. In fact, that percentage rate, both those percentage rates, basically makes us safe to about 2010. But so obviously when we get into 2011-2012, we're going to have some nice spikes to still meet the AYP for No Child Left Behind. English proficiency was 55.13. No Child Left Behind is 35.2. So we were 20% higher than the No Child Left Behind expectations for the 2007-2008 school years. Just to break this down a little further for you, if you look at the KC math clusters, so these are the math clusters or the strands of where the questions lie. So in the math, you've got five different strands, and you can see those on the board. As you would expect, Algebra 1 is the lowest because that's the highest level questions on the KC. So that's going to be typical of any high school that you see. So basically, of the questions that were probability and statistics, our students answered 75-plus percent of them correctly, et cetera. And you can see, again, Algebra 1 being the lowest, measurement and geometry the second to the lowest, and again, those are to be expected because those are the more, those are the higher level standards that are covered on the KC. Now, in terms of the math, I'm sorry, we just did math. In terms of the English, again, you can see the five clusters that are covered on the California High School Exit Exam, and you can see how our students performed. And again, you can see that their performance is, for the most part, going up in all the clusters except for writing strategies. We had a little dip from 06, but better than 07. What's interesting about this is, typically at a high school, the two areas that you'll see are the lowest are writing strategies, which we have, but also reading comprehension. Usually reading comprehension is down around writing strategies. So even though, you know, I'm not claiming that we're happy with 76.8, relative to a lot of high schools, that's actually a nice score for reading comprehension. That's typically where students have a lot more difficulty. So we're obviously doing something a little better there relative to other high schools, but we're kind of with a lot of other high schools in terms of the writing strategies being the lowest score. And then on the rubric, the KC rubric is a 1 through 4. You can see that our students average a 2.53. So that just breaks it down for you a little further. And this is what we give to our teachers, so our teachers can isolate areas of weakness versus areas of strength and then make appropriate accommodations in their curriculum and their instructional techniques. Now we go to the not-so-good news. And I'm not saying it's terrible news, but it's not the best of news. And that's the API. You know, as you know, the API has gone down for the last couple of years, but that trend's quickly going to change. Now, in 2006, that was a high for West Covina High School of 738. And I don't have to tell you that the buzz in the external, well, obviously the internal community and the external community, was that was higher than South Hills High School. And I know that was a big deal here. Believe me, it was also a big deal for places outside of West Covina. It was noticed. Unfortunately, that's now taken a turn downward. But again, we're going to fix that. There's no high school out there that we don't feel good about whooping. 2007, the points went down a little. But the good news, again, is, to be fair, in 2007, West Covina High School was still a 10 out of 10 compared to similar schools in the state of California, given the demographics. 7 out of 10 relative to all high schools in the state of California. So that's still pretty good news. It just wasn't quite as good as 2006. And then this last year, 2008, came down just a little, came down 3 more points. We won't know how that is comparison-wide to similar schools or to all the schools in California until the winter when the base API comes down from the state. And that's when they tell us how we did comparatively to other schools. You can see our significant subgroups. Basically, who went up, who went down. And the ones to really highlight, I think, Obviously, you're concerned about all your subgroups, but the ones in special programs are your EL population, and that went down significantly from 06. So that's certainly a concern, and we'll have to look at why that is. Sometimes, you know, it gets a little random there because of the population of kids testing in or out of EL. Special ed is a good, that's good news. Look at that, from 429 in 06 up to an API of 485. So not only 19 points last year, but approximately 56 points in 2 years. So that's a good news. Okay? Now this again breaks it down for you a little further. What this slide shows for you, these are the percentage of kids that were below basic and far below basic. So as you know, there's the five quintiles. What we want to do is we want to move them out of the far below basic and the below basic upwards. We want them on the top end being in the proficient and the advanced bands. So this shows you the percentage of our kids that were below basic and far below basic. So when you look at the difference, what you want to see is a negative. We actually want to see that number going down. So for instance, in ninth grade English, in 2007, 17% of our kids were below basic and far below basic. That actually grew in 2008 to 21, so that's not a good thing. So a positive number here is not a good thing. Grade 10 grew up to 30%, below basic, far below basic. Grade 11 grew to 37%. So those were all growth in areas that we don't want to see growth. Now, if you look at the math, Algebra 1, 65% from 66%. The good news is we had a decrease of 1%. The bad news is that's still not near acceptable to have 65% of our kids below basic and far below basic in anything. A little better in geometry, but it's still not nearly acceptable, I don't think, in anyone's eyes, especially mine. Algebra 2, that's a nice little growth. We had 51% that were below basic and far below basic in 2007. That went down to 37%. So that is a nice little drop. Again, I don't look at 37% as an acceptable number, but relative to the year before, that's a nice drop. And if we can continue that, then we'll be certainly on the right course. Summative math is the test that your kids that are out of Algebra 2 take. Basically, it's the standards of Algebra 1, Geometry, and Algebra 2. What it is, it's your juniors in pre-calculus and calculus that are taking that test. 44%, given that population of kids, is nowhere near acceptable. Those are your top kids. And we had a growth of 4% more of the kids. And boy, if you compare it to 2006, that's, boy, from 20%, which is not a bad little number, that's a good number, below basic, far below basic, up to 44%, there's something really wrong with that that we need to take care of. That's simply not even close to acceptable. So that breaks those down for you a little more. Now let's look at the opposite end of that. And in this, a positive number is a good thing. This is the I got ahead of myself. We're still at negative being good, positive being bad. These are the far below basics and below basics in science and history that I hadn't covered yet. Biology, 2008, only 17% of our kids were far below basic and basic. That's a good number. That's a nice little number. And it's 7% better than the year before. Chemistry, 26%, not a bad number, and it stayed static. 12% in physics is dynamite, but I'll throw that in with a grain of salt. I don't know how many numbers we're talking about that, and to be fair, we may be talking about a small amount of numbers, and we may be talking about kids just in AP physics. But that being said, 12% is still a nice little number. But it was not as good as 2007. 2006, I can't speak to the zero. Maybe it was five kids all AP taking the test. I really don't know, so I can't really speak to that. Earth science, we had a decrease, which is a good thing, of 4. 34% of the kids were below basic, far below basic. Life science, it was 29%. And the life science test, that's not one of the end-of-the-course CSTs. The state, in their ultimate wisdom, decided to throw more testing at us to kind of convolute the star. 3 years ago, I believe it was, they threw in, for all 10th graders, they have to take the No Child Left Behind life science test. That's what that is. So essentially, your sophomores take two different CSTs. One is the end-of-the-year course, whatever course they're in. The other one is the life science exam. And so that's the results from that. World history, 38% of our kids were below basic and far below basic. Again, we need to do a lot better than that. That was a growth of 2. U.S. history, 28% is not bad. Still obviously like to see it get better. But it did get better from the year before, but it's not a good thing relative to 05 and 06. All right, so now let's look at the other end, the kids, the students that are proficient and advanced. And here a positive number is a good thing, a negative number is not. And we went all the way down to 2002 here so you could see the growth. So we've seen nice steady growth. I mean, if you go from 2002 to 2008, we've got some nice growth. But if you shorten that up from 2006 when we had the highest score API-wise to 2008, then not as good. So freshmen, in terms of proficient and advanced, where, again, all children should be proficient, we had 52% of our ninth graders in English. To be honest with you, that's not a bad English score. Okay, for 52% to be proficient advanced, not bad. Again, we want to do better, and it's worse from the all-time high of 2007 by 5, but not bad. Grade 10 goes down to 42%, which is a growth, but the troubling thing is that's 10 points lower or 10% lower than 2008. Juniors down to a 34% proficient and advanced, way down from 2006. Now, here's the interesting thing about STAR that I'll point out, and this has to do with motivation. Look at the junior class, 2008. 34% were proficient and advanced. Well, let's look at them as a cohort. In 2007, the year before, they were 7% better. When they were freshmen, they were 18% better. Same thing in 2007. The freshmen were 57%. The sophomores were 42%. This is typical of high schools, and I really think this has to do with more of motivation than anything else. Here's what we're going to do to fix that, I'll tell you right now. There's something called the EAP, and if you're not familiar with the EAP, it's the Early Assessment and Placement Exam. The EAP is what the UCs use, and basically it's their placement exam. And what the state did, and I think this was a good thing, about 5 years ago, they embedded this into the STAR exam. So what they did is they literally embedded the UC placement exam into the STAR exam. You take it as a junior, and it's embedded into the English and the math. The problem is a lot of the kids aren't necessarily 100% aware of that. As soon as you get in their face, go in the classrooms, talk to every single English class, junior English class, and tell them the importance of this. Tell them, look, guys, this is embedded in the STAR exam. If you pass this test, you will not have to go the summer before college and take that placement exam and pay $1,000. You may be able to skip up to 3 math classes and 3 English classes that are remedial classes in the college system. Right there, we're talking about 2 quarters. We're talking thousands of dollars that these kids will not have to face if they do well on the EAP exam. The problem is we need to be in their face making sure they're aware of this. I've done that at my prior 2 high schools, and at both places what you've seen is dramatic increases in those junior scores. That in itself makes a huge difference in performance in the API. So that's one of the strategies we will be instituting this year. So hopefully 12 months from now when I'm standing here, we're going to see I'll be able to say, look at the juniors. They're our highest scoring class, and a lot of that will be motivational. Math, proficient advanced, 10% in Algebra 1. Nobody's going to pretend that's acceptable. It was better than any other year except for the same as 2004, but we obviously still have to do better. Now, obviously, the lower the math class, the lower amount of proficient and advanced students because those students, by nature, are performing at a lower level. However, still not nearly acceptable. Geometry was better at 23%, but it is a decrease from 06 and 07. Again, Algebra 2, something really good was going on in Algebra 2 last year. We had a huge decrease from prior years in below basic and far below basic, and a great increase in proficient and advanced. Still not high enough, but something really good was going on there, and we're going to work on keeping that going. Summative math, again, dropped down 13 points from 06. So we're going to have to take a look at that and find out why that is and change that trend. Okay, science and social science, proficient and advanced. Science had some nice increases. 43% in biology for an increase of 5%. Chemistry had an increase of 6%. Physics, nice increase of 13%. Earth science, 4%. And that No Child Left Behind 10th grade life science, CST, an increase of 12% and 6% over the high of 2006. So science did a nice job in relative. Again, we're not happy. Even when we do a great job, we're not happy. We're going to strive to do better. But still, relative to prior years, very encouraging. World history went up 1% at 35% proficient advanced. U.S. history went up 4% from 37 to 41%. So that gives you gets into the data a little more for you so you can get a little more of a grasp on it. So what are we going to do about all this? So professional development plans, what we're going to be looking at. First of all, and I don't like using acronyms, but, you know, education is full of acronyms. First acronym I have for you is what's called a PLC. It stands for Professional Learning Community. You've probably all heard of professional learning communities. They have really kind of become the hot new thing in education. I've actually believed in them for a long time. What's interesting is I went and I took this concept to my dad, who taught at West Covina High School from time it opened in 57 until he retired in the late 80s. And I was really excited about what I was doing many years ago at Bonita High School, and I had these ideas about what I was going to do. And so I ran it past him, and he looked at me and goes, we were doing that in the early 60s. So it's amazing the way how things cycle, and sometimes good ideas, we kind of lose track of them. But this is a good idea. So what is a professional learning community? A professional learning community is any group of professionals that get together, and in this case, educators, and first of all, align their curriculum. As you know, we have the California Content Standards. And Marzano has said that even if you had 184 full days of school with no interruptions, and kids were there every day, which, by the way, doesn't happen in California high schools, it would still take you a year and a half to cover all the standards properly. So what it takes is we have to get together as teachers and educators and decide which standards do we think, which concepts are most important. And that's based on what is going to give them the most success at the next level. So we provide time for the teachers to do this. From that, we have what I call essential learning outcomes. I stole that from a husband and wife team called the DeFours. Some people call it power standards. Some people call it must and wants. And basically, it's deciding what is it. It's agreeing that what is it that's important for West Covina High School students to know when they leave this school, when they're done with this class. What is it most important that they know? And then basically, we align our assessments around that. It's important that those assessments are common assessments. So if you've got a sophomore English teacher giving a test, it's really important that all the sophomore English teachers are essentially giving the same test. Or else what's going to happen is when you get to junior English, you've got kids that have all come from 5, 6, 10 different teachers, and they're all going to have 5, 10 different skill sets. It's important they all have the same skill set. Also, common expectations, common grading. By the way, the first three blocks of that we've initiated, as you're probably aware today, with training called Edgenuity training. District has brought in a company called Edgenuity. They have a lot of goods, but one of those is professional development. When we sat down and as principals witnessed what they had to offer several weeks ago, I was extremely excited because what they were offering in terms of development is personally exactly what I believe in and where high school should go. So that training actually started today with our teachers. And then an understanding that data drives decisions. So when you give these common assessments, you get together as teachers and you talk about the test. And where there have been areas of weaknesses, you have to come to a decision-making process about what are we going to do about that? It's not okay if my kids don't understand factoring. It's not like, hey, I taught factoring, they didn't get it, time to move on to chapter 4. That's not acceptable. So we have to make decisions curricularly and instructionally. What are we going to do to ensure that they're learning this material that we feel is essential for them to learn? And then sharing best practices instructionally. That includes differentiation of instruction, student engagement, how we check for understanding and get feedback from the students instantly, and then make on the feet decisions about what we're going to do about that in the class, and then how we're going to reteach. As well as when these strategies don't work, what interventions do we offer for our students, and then frequent monitoring of instruction and learning as administrators so that we can make sure that this is happening, and more importantly, we can coach our teachers and our educators about how better to deal with our students and to have good instructional strategies. Okay, so what resources do we have for all this? First of all, we obviously, in terms of fiscal, that's on the left, we have school site staffing. I'm sorry, that's, yeah. SIP funds, EIA LEP funds, pupil retention block grant, GATE funds, the VPA grants, which are the visual fine arts performing grants. And I should have actually added to that the 712 remedial funds, which fund our after school and our summer programs, community college, which helps fund our summer school programs, adult ed, which we use aggressively to fund after school and summer school programs, and also the ROP, which is really a great partner in the East San Gabriel Valley with Dr. Adler. They're willing to be very aggressive with a partnership and really do a lot of things for the sites. In terms of human resources, obviously we have the site administration, our district administration. I certainly should have put our site staff, our peer coaching model, the professional learning communities we'd like to develop, BITSA. Again, I should have included ROP, as we have ROP personnel on our staff as well. And action steps. Edgenuity training, which I've discussed. The implementation of professional learning communities at the high school. Again, monitoring of instruction and learning. And our intervention and remedial program. Other action steps. Focusing on instruction. And when I say that, there's a lot of things that happen at a high school. And there's a lot of good things that happen at a high school. But not all of them have to do with instruction. And that's a good thing. But sometimes we lose our focus. So we kind of have to rein things in and make sure that our focus is on instruction while still making sure that we aggressively pursue activities programs, athletic programs, music programs, et cetera, because those are also an equal part of the education of our students. Focusing on our expectations, a positive climate. Aligning the budgetary resources. You know, we really need to have our plan for our budget. And that goes to the next square down. Technology on our campus is a real problem. Basically, we only have 3 computer labs on our campus that are available to the entire staff, and only one of them currently work. The other 2 have 11-year-old computers. That's a problem. I'd like to thank the district for stepping up, and now it appears that one of those computer labs is going to be staffed with new computers, and then I'm going to do everything I can to align and be frugal with our resources so that somehow we can figure out a way at our site with our site resources to pay for the other computer lab. And then in the future, it'll be about trying to add technology. You know, I'd love to see in the future us being able to access what's it called when you don't plug the computer in?
Wireless.
Thank you. Wireless technology. Yeah. And get laptops and have the charging stations, the laptops. You can share them among teachers. The laptops are usually cheaper in terms of money-wise. So I'd love to see us move in that direction. I understand there's some issues there with security of the network and all that stuff. Also, there's, you know, geez, in 2008, it's amazing the software and the online programs that are out there, the individualized learning programs. That's like the new cottage industry, and we need to take advantage of that for our special ed population, for our EL population, for our kids that are having more difficulty in a standardized, classic classroom setting. We need to be able to have individualized online programs for those kids. Let's face it, these kids are really into technology. That's something that stimulates them. And I've seen some amazing things when you get kids on these individualized programs. And there's a lot of them out there, and it's only going to get better. So we need to get our technology to where our students deserve so that we can access these types of programs. And then again, I talked about smaller learning communities. I talked about professional learning communities. Smaller learning communities is something else we'd like to look at. As you know, we're closing in on 3,000 kids right now. I think we're at 2,912 is the last number I saw. That's a lot of kids. That's a small city. That's a little daunting when kids come onto a campus from a middle school and all of a sudden we've got all these children. That's real daunting, in fact. It also makes it real easy for kids to fall through the cracks. And that's just simply not acceptable. So what a smaller learning community is, it's basically where you've tried to create an environment where the kids have a sense of belonging. You take maybe hypothetically 80 kids and you give them a core of 4 teachers at 20-1. They've got smaller class sizes. All 4 teachers have the same 80 kids. You have a counselor that dedicates part of their time towards this group of children. They meet, they agree to meet X amount of times at lunch. And basically they're bird dogging those students. They're getting buy-in. They're meeting their needs. You can use the technology. You have the software, the online programs to really try to meet their needs. And obviously I'm talking about kids, groups of kids that are struggling. On the upper end, I think that works equally as well for your honors level kids. I think if you can somehow create like an accelerated core, I've called it at other places, and actually I stole that name, so I didn't call it that at other places. It was there when I got there at Bonita High School, and then I did imitate it at Covina High School, where you take your honors level freshmen, and basically you try to core those kids again with the same teachers so that you've got the same three or four teachers with the same 100-120 kids, so that basically, again, there's a sense of belonging. You know, they're really taking care of them. They're bird-dogging them when necessary. It makes communication easier with the students and the kids. And it just creates this environment where, you know, your special ed kids are having a lot of their needs met with IEPs, with smaller classes, your EL students as well. But now you can take your students that are having trouble performing that aren't in a program, and you can also take your higher-level kids. And then all of a sudden what that creates for you is a nice little middle area where, again, you can kind of imitate some smaller learning communities with those freshmen with the same teachers. My opinion is that if you really take care of these kids when they're freshmen and sophomores, a lot of times they really mature, and if you can get them to their junior year and get them expectation-wise where they need to be, good things are going to happen. So we'd kind of like in the future to try to imitate what we've been able to accomplish at some other schools with smaller learning communities. So that's another action step we're looking at. And what's the evidence of that? Obviously the high-stakes results. You know, when we come here, and you know, year from year goes up and down, but when we come here 3 years from now and 4 years from now and 5 years from now and comparing where we are right now, what do the AP results look like? What's the CASI growth? Our API, our CST results? Where are we at with the common exams? Obviously, our graduation rates, the amount of kids meeting the A through G requirements you see in Cal State universities, our EAP results that I described earlier for you, obviously grades. You know, that's a huge indicator. And in high school, that's one of the main indicators relative to their acceptance to the next level. Also evidence of our work in terms of school climate is all the measures we've just mentioned above. You know, expectations are like a snowball. You know, as you have expectations in one area, it snowballs into your other areas. But also, we can look at our amount of truancies, our amount of discipline, the participation in our student activities programs, and just our observed behavior in terms of evidence that we're on the right track and we're doing the right things for our school climate. Evidence of the PLCs. Do we have essential learning outcomes? Have we agreed? What is it that's important for kids to know when they graduate West Covina High School and in each class? Do we have norms, acceptable norms for those groups, the way they deal with each other professionally? Do we have common exams in place, common expectations, common grading practices? And are we looking at data and using that to make curricular and instructional decisions, or are we just paying it lip service? And that's all we have. So at this time, I realize once you get me up here, I can talk and talk and talk, and I've taken time, but if you have any questions, I'd be more than willing to answer those.
Mr. Cox. To what extent is there a correlation, let's put it this way, between 8th grade Algebra 1 and the high school Algebra 1 and the high performance level and below basic levels?
Can you elaborate a little more, Steve? In terms of the fact that we've got our kids taking Algebra 1?
Yeah, that and the fact that, I know there's a tremendous reluctance statewide to even have that requirement at the 8th grade level. So are we?
I'll give you my personal opinion. You know, and it is based on 9 years as an administrator and looking at data. Because I'll tell you what I've done, and I'm crazy for doing it, but every year I personally, and I did it even as a principal the last 2 years, I personally look at every child's transcript to make sure they're properly placed in the summer for their fall class. Because I think placement is that crucial, especially in math. So that makes me stupid and foolish, but it's also given me an insight into tens of thousands of transcripts over the last 9 years. What I have seen is that when you have kids in a level of class that's inappropriate, all that's going to happen is failure. That being said, as we, in the elementary and middle school levels, get these kids to higher levels of math, what I continually see is we have far more kids in higher levels of math than the ninth grade level, as long as they're ready for Algebra 1. My personal opinion is, as long as the kids are ready to be in Algebra 1 and they're successful, if they're successful Algebra 1 in eighth grade, they should be stars in high school. And if they're not, somehow we're collectively screwing things up. My fear is that we put kids in Algebra 1 just because the state says that maybe in 3 years we're going to have a CST of Algebra 1 in eighth grade, even though, as you all know, everybody is suing for that. My fear is we put kids in Algebra 1 that don't have the skill set to be in Algebra 1, and essentially what I've seen in the past when we've done that is they've wasted time because they don't get where they're at skill-wise. They now lose a year of instruction, and now they're frustrated and really remember, and it just creates more reasons they don't like math. So I think we have to be careful that we properly place kids. I think that being said, we have to keep raising the bar. We keep having to have expectations of kids, and they'll meet that because we're meeting the challenges more and more at the elementary and the middle school levels. That being said, not every child...
I believe that to be true. You believe that we're meeting those standards, those requirements
with 100%.
The group that you're getting in has in effect met that level?
Oh, no.
They're nowhere close.
No. And so what I...
Are we missing it?
No.
Missing the boat in the middle? I know you haven't been there long enough to make that.
If kids are properly placed and they're successful in Algebra 1 in 8th grade, they're going to be stars. If they're not properly placed, we've got problems. I can't speak to West Covina because this is my beginning of my 8th week and I haven't looked at any data. But I will tell you this. I do firmly believe that more and more kids every year should be ready for higher levels of math. I think it behooves us at every level to try to raise the bar, but I think we have to have safety nets for those kids that don't have the skill level. And the other danger I see is that there's a large percentage of kids, and I know I'm not telling you guys anything you don't know, that are not West Covina Unified born, raised, and trained. And all of a sudden, they end up on our doorstep in 8th and 9th grade, and they're coming from districts that have different expectations. And I don't know yet. I haven't been here long enough to know what percentage of that is. I will tell you, at Covina High School, that was about 25 to 30% of our freshmen were not even from the Covina Valley Unified School District. They're coming from districts who have a whole different perspective and expectation, and what I find is those kids many times struggle mightily, including private school kids. And so now somehow we have to have a safety net for those kids. I'll give you an example. I can't tell you how many times I have seen transcripts from private schools locally and even public schools in systems around this valley. You would think we're doing okay. Kids have A's, B's, and algebra, geometry. So you logically put them in the next level class. Their algebra skills are non-existent. You almost wonder what's going on at some of these other schools. So that's another variable as well.
And one other thing, thank you for bringing the attention, the issue on the technology and that. I hope we've heard that pretty cleanly and clearly. And
any help you all want to give me, I'd appreciate it.
Thanks. We made significant commitments years ago. I've been here too long, so I can't remember back that far. But we made some pretty significant improvements in technology at the high school. We were quite proud of that. Huh?
11 years ago?
Yeah. No.
Yep, digital high school.
Anyway, we've made some pretty significant. We were pretty proud of that. If that's basically gone down to
nothing, then we address that very seriously. Yeah, and that's the good news and bad news with technology. The good news is it's getting more and more proficient. The bad news is, Jimmy, Christmas, if you don't keep up with it every 5-6 years,
get the computers in.
So and as you all know, it's an expensive proposition.
Thank you.
So it's the good and the bad.
Special ed scores for API went up. Mm-hmm. I was wondering how many students opted out of the traditional tests and took the alternative test, and I believe it's called the Kappa.
Kappa, correct.
5% more?
Five kids total.
Kappa or CMA?
Kappa. We didn't take the CMA here last year, correct? It was a pilot, and I don't even think it was a pilot for high school, was it? So, yeah, just the Kappa, 5 students.
So that didn't account for the increase. I was just wondering because there wasn't.
That's
good.
I understand where you're going with that. Then that would be important to point out. And if it did go up because we'd have an increase, it would behoove us to point that out.
So I'm excited.
Absolutely.
When I was at back-to-school night in some of the advanced math classes, they were saying that more students were taking the advanced math. And they weren't always as prepared as they had been in the past. Do you think that could be part of the reason the test scores went down more in below basic?
Okay, first
because
of all,
more students were taking
first
it.
Of all, the teacher actually said that to you?
actually probably said it to the class
I hope
and the parents.
To you and not to the class. But either
well,
way,
well,
either
let's just
way,
say I heard it.
You know, and I can't speak to that. I can certainly ask for if Ms. Louie or Ms. Windemuth have an opinion. Being that I wasn't here, I really can't. You know, I'm at a big disadvantage.
There's been a lack of expectations from top down in the district in terms of mathematics. Mr. Cox asked a question about mathematics and what his feelings were, but if you saw that kids passed geometry and not necessarily did well in algebra, there was a policy that they couldn't go into geometry and then until they passed algebra. And we piloted to have the teachers experience success that some kids can pass geometry. So they did. We did that, and they were able to pass. One of the things that we've been fighting is A through G classes and the number of students that are able to meet these. As we go through that, teachers will react based on the small group that they've had and now the fact that we've augmented. But all the research shows that the more you augment it, yes, you'll still have failure, but more kids will pass it, okay, because they've been given the opportunity and the access. So the access for us is a critical element on his accountability. And what you see in the past 3 years is more of that access. Same thing happened in biology. They would not let them into biology in ninth grade. They had to teach life science except for a few chosen. We said no more of that. And so there's been some in-house practices that have had to change over time by putting the goal that more kids need the access. So hopefully what we see is that as teachers experience that, you know, we will still have kids who struggle, but we'll also see more and more kids passing. And it's proven that that's going to be the case. Mathematicians and accountants such as Mr. Cox believe that unless you can add 2 and 2 and make that 4, there's no other way to reach 4. You know, you can't do a 3 plus 1 or a, you know, something else. And so what we've had to prove is that that's not the case always. But, you know, luckily...
Ronnie, did your baby crawl before he walked?
But huh? Luckily, we've proven not that Ronnie, theory.
Steve.
Thank you. Some walk without crawling.
The Health and Science Academy was, when we moved it back on to the traditional high school campus, was going to try to be one of the smaller learning communities. Is that still a smaller learning community, or is that done away with completely?
We don't have.
Did away with it completely.
We don't have those at all.
Okay.
But that would be a good example of a smaller learning community. So we want to try to, and I hate to call it a poor man's smaller learning community, but what we've had success for in other places is a poor man's smaller learning community where we don't have to bring in extra personnel to do it. Maybe we need to use a few more sections out of our staffing, but, you know, you rob Peter to pay Paul. We just are a little more judicious with our staffing here so we can throw a little more into a smaller learning community. And we've had a lot of success with it, so... But that is an example of what that would have been in the past.
And when were you expecting to be able to implement smaller learning communities?
I get real impatient, so we've already done a lot of things in we've already done quite a few things in 7 weeks, and we anticipate doing quite a few things in the next 31 with the goal of kind of changing the climate, changing people's I don't want to say changing anxiety levels, but having some anxiety, and but in a positive way, and doing certain things that will help the climate this year, and then basically having a framework that we start next year, day one, with, and then that will certainly evolve over the next several years.
Thank you.
You bet. Thanks.
Mr. Fuller?
Number one, what was your overall proficiency rate?
Let's look at it. The math proficiency based on the exit exam was 50.9. English was 55.13.
What about the CST? Different categories, right?
The API?
CST, your proficiency.
Oh, proficiency? Let's see. And I apologize, you guys don't have this in front of you. Let's see. Proficient and advanced in freshman. Oh, let's do it that way.
That's a good deal.
See, that's what happens when you bring the tech
George,
guru.
We can get you a copy of this. I mean, he spent a lot of time on these numbers, so I just don't want to go back and revisit
it. Like
you can look at this, George.
See him from here.
Yeah.
But,
okay, you're looking at him.
I've got a screen over here. You're basing your proficiency off the Casey?
No, that's the CSTs.
Okay, so you're basing it off the CSTs. Yeah, I like to see the numbers. I am concerned about math.
Oh, absolutely.
And I'm glad Mrs. Lace Castillo addressed that, because not only are we seeing, shall we say, difficulties this year, we have seen difficulties in the past. And I'm wondering what your response is to that, including what we could do as a district in scaffolding so we can get students in the eighth grade proficient at algebra so they can hit the bricks running in geometry in high school. What would be what's your overall game plan? Because it's getting year to year now.
Absolutely. I think everything that I've presented, I think that encompasses everything, and as well as math. And more specific to math is we need to make sure that our math teachers are trained in whatever strategies that we need to train them in. We need to look at the textbook adoption, which is coming up, and make sure that we have a good tool. And a textbook is just a tool, but it's an important tool. We need to look at online and software products that individualize, and math is the where they've made the greatest gains in these programs. I've seen some good ones. I've bought some good ones, used them in other places. I'll tell you one product that is excellent is the Design-Based Learning Math Algebra 1 that comes out of the ROP. We've had great success with it here at West Covina. We had great success with it at Covina High School. So I think we need to look at expanding that by having our current teacher train some of our other math teachers that are experiencing difficulty with maybe kids that are experiencing skill deficiencies and utilize some of those techniques as well. So it's an all of the above. But, you know, you're right, and every high school struggles with math more than any other issue. That being said, we need to find answers, and where we're at now is simply not acceptable.
Okay, what would you say is the percentage now of those going on beyond algebra at the high school, just completing that one-year requirement?
Well, right now our freshmen started Algebra 1, so, you know, and they could go to B if they don't experience success in the first year, so I couldn't give you those off the top of my head.
Okay. How are we doing on the expansion of the AG requirements, as you mentioned? In terms of student enrollment and expanding to everyone.
The bottom line is we'll have a master schedule where the core areas will have nothing but UC CSU-approved classes, and that includes the fine art classes. And that in itself, if you just have what Marzano calls a guaranteed and viable curriculum, that at West Covina High School you will go through this program, and there are, again, essential learning outcomes that when you graduate West Covina High School, this is what you're expected to know. Just by that process alone, we'll have a high percentage of kids that will be A through G. Now, that being said, you're always going to have a population that simply can't meet those needs. So then we have to be cognizant of that, make sure our ROP, our voc ed programs are in place that give those kids skills, but also give them the ability to be close so that if they choose a junior college path, they can easily end up at a four-year university because they still have a high level of skills when they leave West Covina High School.
And in response to that, I guess what I'm bothering me is I've heard that before, that there is a certain number. How are we eliminating that certain number or decreasing that certain number and not seeing? I see them as students with potential challenges to us, not can't. And I wonder if we're communicating that we expect A to G, and we will scaffold or carry you the entire way, and if you don't make it, you will be a good percentage of the way there when you leave.
Yeah.
Versus can't.
And that is certainly what we're going to do. And as to your comment that we've heard that before, and you're not going to believe I'm going to say this, but I'll share with you what I shared at the staff meeting today when a teacher asked me something similar. There's a new sheriff in town. I haven't been here before.
Okay. How are you using data? I mean, frequent monitoring. How often do we benchmark it? Are we doing benchmarking? How often are we sharing the data? How are we extrapolating it? Are we giving substitute time for configuration of analysis? What are we doing with the data, and how much are we using, and how much time can we delegate to it?
You know, that varies by department. They all are using benchmarks currently, the core areas, and we've talked to them about including more and more in terms of common assessments. the next big step, well, first of all, we've got to get the skeleton in place, and the skeleton is the curriculum. You know, and I'll give you an example. You know, a standard might say that you need to analyze something. Well, a lot of times educators read that as learn, memorize. Well, those are two entirely different skills. So we also have to set straight what the expectations are, what the curriculum is. Then we move to the next step, which is the assessments and giving them the time to analyze. An advantage at West Covina High School is the Friday there's 45 minutes set aside for collaboration. That is the perfect environment for what I've described as professional learning communities, where they can use that time to meet by professional learning communities and do all the things that we've talked about.
Do they have the data in front of them when they meet?
Oh, they will. We currently have often. EduSoft in this district. They do utilize that, and that does run various reports. And we'll make sure that whatever data system we use in the future, be it EduSoft, be it something else that the district decides to move to, that they will get those reports. We're fortunate at West Covina also in that we have somebody in the office that is an ARES expert and a data expert that can run those reports for us. Ronnie and Stephanie do a great job of getting that data out. We've taken all the CSTs from last year, the AP results from last year, the high school exit exams from last year. We've gotten that into the teachers' hands with the instruction that they need to look at that, glean from the data what needs to be done differently. But what's more powerful than that is what are called formative assessments, not end-of-the-year things where you get the results months and months later. Formative assessments being it's an exam you give right now, end of the chapter, end of the unit exam, it's corrected. Monday we're talking about the results and what we're going to do about those results. That's the most important type of data. To answer your question, it varies by department. I'll defer to Stephanie or Ronnie. They might be able to give you more specifics about exactly where West Covina High School is now in relation to looking at data and using that as an advantage.
I can speak about geometry and specifically right now because we're currently working with geometry team. They had instituted and administered a 1.1 benchmark, received the results, and they're at a point where they feel very comfortable speaking about each other's results, having us one spreadsheet, looking at each other's what period did well on which part of the standard, and then also what they did to reteach and what they should do to reteach as a group, and then instituted a 1.2 benchmark that has a similar standards in there but different questions, different problems, and seen an increase in their results and all across geometry. So we were very pleased to see that. And yes, they're sitting together with the results in front of them after school during content roundtables specifically. And yes, it takes a little time for them to kind of get a little swift kick in that. But they're really motivated in discussing with one another, how did you get your kids to understand inequalities? How did you get your students to understand that standard? Because my kids are bombing it. So they have a really good discussion based off of the data that they have for benchmarks.
Thank you. More mundane, but communication, how can we help you, like calling the high school and getting an adult on a regular basis to redirect, especially since we have one central point where we can, it's the only way we can get in as parents into the high school. What can we do to facilitate having an adult on a regular basis and not having to use a voicemail system and kind of guess where you need to be?
You know, when you call the central line, we've always got an adult man there. You know, they could be another. So I can't speak to a personal experience. I do love a phone system that intertwines with your email system, but you know that's
well,
very costly.
Let's talk, because that's another thing that we're coming up with, and not to harp or anything, but to be perfectly honest, I checked at 5:40 this afternoon on the high school website, and it shows Manning's message from fall of 2007.
You're right.
Which, when I go to the community and brag about you, makes it difficult for them to find out about you.
You're absolutely right.
And yet that is for, we designed that for parents to have email access for them. I am aware that sometimes you email the teachers, and the teachers haven't turned on their machine for 7 days, so the machine, it comes back unable to deliver because they aren't getting the machine on. How can we open up that communication in there? Because with a parent in the community.
Yeah, with regard to 7 days, the teachers have to be having their computer on every day because they're doing online attendance. But with regard, you're absolutely right. The website's embarrassing. It's embarrassing to me. We've had many talks about it. The problem is we have no go-to person on our staff that is capable of doing that. So we talked about former students, but we nixed that and said, no, I don't care how good the kid is. 20-year-old tells one friend how to get into the access, it tells two friends, and we don't want that. So we really need a staff member. We don't have that currently, so we're brainstorming. We've got to come up with something because, yeah, it's a little embarrassing to see my name spelled that incorrectly and to have the old principal's message.
I know on this end, if we need to, I'm sure that we can facilitate something to assist that. And to be perfectly honest, I am aware of at least one of your staff that's answering emails at 11:50 at night, which is rather dedicated.
Good for them. I wouldn't answer your email, George, at 11:50 at night.
I wouldn't answer my own email. I get it at 6 in the morning.
But we'll work on it. You know, we've also had problems. One of the tech clerks, as you know, was severely injured and had surgery, and that put things back as well. So, well, we need to have somebody that's on site that can do that so we can update it constantly, and we're not there.
Well, I guess I'm saying if you need email, telephone, those type of things, I don't know. We have lottery money. What do we have?
We have sort of a holistic plan. This district has been talking about computers for a long time. There's a lot of issues that I've discovered in my last 3 years. First of all, we had very slow, not the right cabling, not the right connections. So when Ruben and I started talking about this, we started from scratch, basically. You all know that this new web is just a brand new thing. We've also hired a person to assist the school who's coming from out of, you know, the CAVA money that we got, okay? So we're putting things in place to be able to fix all of this because it does take, as he says, somebody dedicated to it all the time. Even the district's website, you know, it takes somebody going in there all the time, updating information, you know, looking to see what people are sending in to us. So anytime you use these things, you have to make sure that people are using them. We are right now at the point where we're doing the grades and the attendance. Our next step will be the communications back and forth about how, you know, what assignments and so on. But it is a process, and it's a process that had to do with ARIES is a system that we instituted. It was new to the district. That was, what, a year ago?
May 2006.
That system started improving on the data system. Edusoft is another system that has its weaknesses because it wasn't implemented here holistically. So we have found that there has been sort of an incomprehensive effort going on, and we believe that we're going to improve on that. But in addition to that, the high school has a telephone system which, for example, okay, to kind of echo your frustration, I called there today and got no answer. So we send somebody over. There's a button that a student who answered push that was stuck, I guess that's the word, okay? And it was stuck to move it to night shift, so it was not being answered by anyone. That's just my calling today on a, you know, unprecedented basis to talk to somebody over there. So every day there are issues. I'm not putting blame on anybody. There are issues because we have to improve our systems as a whole, and we have to get people who manage those systems. So our goal is to do things comprehensively so that you're not hearing from your next superintendent that you didn't get there.
Maybe we can go to 3,500 if we do that.
And in all fairness on the website, Ruben was out several days ago, and he actually told me, look, email me something and I'll get it on your website, and I did not. So as soon as Ruben became aware, he stepped up and said, hey, you need to figure out something all the time, but for now, get me something, and I haven't done that yet. So it's not that the district hasn't been paying attention. We're just trying to come up with something, a strategy, an individual at our site that can be on this all day,
every day. I'm used to having a person at a high school dedicated full-time to just that.
Amen.
A position just that does data. Absolutely. High schools in Los Angeles all have that position.
Mr. Spence?
On the AP growth, how much of that AP growth is our expansion of offerings, including individual offerings, versus, you know, enrollment in the classes that we have?
I'll defer to Ms. Louie on that.
For the AP courses right now.
Yeah, how much of that is because we're increasing our offerings versus increasing, and how much of that is because it's more inclusive and more kids are moving into that level, the growth in the AP?
It's both. Because right now we do, because there's a number of kids who would like to take the course and we do not have any barriers, that also increases the number of sections for, mm-hmm. for instance, AP Psychology, mm-hmm. As well as AP Calculus. So we're pretty excited about allowing these kids to really challenge themselves. And we encourage them to hold our hand, group together with parents and teachers, and really discuss what we can do to help out the kids.
Okay. Can you put up the slide of the PLCs for a second? Because I guess this is the question I had when I was looking at it.
Mm-hmm.
That's it. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Which of those things aren't going on? Because I guess my question is, you know, if I had $10 for every time I heard we're going to align our curriculum, you know what I mean? I could get you all the computers you wanted, you know, over the years. Because every time we have a presentation on what we're going to do, you know, mm-hmm. we're going to align the curriculum. You know, so I don't know. Are we not aligning it? Is it misaligned? You know, I don't understand. You know, data drives decision making, you know, same thing. A lot of those things, every time there's a presentation on, you know, improvement, those are the things you hear. And so I'm trying to get an idea on what's, you know, not going on, what is going on, I guess, of those things.
You know, Mike, in answer to your question, all of those things are going on to an extent and in varying degrees depending on which core area you're talking about. Some of the core areas are better than others. You know, there is alignment of curriculum. However, there are pacing guides and there are benchmarks. But the key component is there needs to be more of the skeleton in place before that of really looking at the standards. What are those standards really saying to us? And, again, really talking about essential learning outcomes and what is it that's important for success at the next level. So, and, again, common exams are being done in the form of benchmarks, but not enough formative exams that literally are happening often, that you can look at those results and then make instant curricular and instructional decisions to change what you're doing that so the kids succeed. You know, probably the weakest area up there is the sharing of information. Ronnie included what was going on in geometry. That's probably the weakest area, but those areas are all going to get far better. And I understand you've heard that before, but, you know, we're going to really actually do it. And I'm sure, and the bottom line is, and I'm not telling you anything you don't know. West Covina High School grew tremendously at the beginning of this decade for several years. And a lot of those things were put into place. A lot of those things were being done. But everything can be tweaked and everything can be made better, and we're just going to make the model better. But West Covina High School is a different place than it was in 1998. I'm not telling you anything you don't know. You're part of the reason that's there. But a lot's happened since the 90s, and West Covina High School is really a far better place because of what's happened over the past several years. And a lot of that was put into place. You're absolutely correct. We just need to do a better job of it.
Okay, I guess, you know, obviously you've only been there, you know, 2 months. So, but, you know, sometimes it's helpful, you know, to know that. Okay, when we're talking about this, you know, if it's frequent monitoring of instruction and learning, well, you know, I hope every school does that. You know, and every school principal tells us they're doing that, you know. And so I guess the question is, you know, what's, you know, it's hard for me sometimes to get a handle on, okay, this is where we're at, and this is what we still need to do in that particular area, because everybody will just say those, you know.
Sure.
You know, a lot of those same things, you know, just say that. What's the difference of an essential learning outcome and the standards?
Basically, the standards, again, there's the problem with the state of California is that there's too many standards in each grade level, in each subject. And again, Marzano, who I'm sure you're familiar with, has actually said that, based on all the research, that it would take a year and a half, the typical high school class, it would take a year and a half of non-interrupted education to get all those standards in, covered in the depth they need to. So that being said, we really kind of need to look at all the standards and decide which one they're essential. These kids have to know these standards. So some of the standards you agree that you're going to cover in far more depth. Some of the others, maybe you're going to cover more at more of a superficial level. And so it's an agreement about, in sophomore English, what do these kids have to know to experience success in junior English? So let me backtrack. It actually is a 12K thing. It actually starts at college. To have success in college, what skills do our 12th graders need? Then the 12th grade teachers need to have a conversation. Okay, if they need to have these skills in place to succeed in college, we need to make sure these outcomes are in place. Then the 12th grade teachers had that the vertical articulation with the 11th grade teachers, and so on down. And in answer to what percentage, basically, to some extent, we're blowing it all up and we're starting over again. This whole process.
Can I just augment that? A couple things, Mike, because I think it's important what you're saying about what you're seeing here. And a couple things I would tell you. First of all, I'm glad that Mr. Gautreaux gets it, that these are the things that have to be done. That's my first step. I applaud you for coming up with this, okay? Because he and I have the same assessment. However, I want to caution you and him to never believe that there's a finish line. That high school's math department, in the 3 years that I have been here, has had a turnover of probably half or more. Mm-hmm. Is that right?
That's absolutely.
Okay.
Well,
so every time we bring in new staff or new students or new programs or new assessments, we have to regroup and go back to that as a checklist that says redo, redo, redo. So I'm hoping that what he says next time is here's our progress towards that, you know, based on what he's assessing now and what he'll tell us a year from now. The second point I would make is essential learning outcomes. You need to know that the state of California gives us what they call blueprints, which have all the standards that they think are important that are going to be tested.
Right.
Okay. Basically, what teachers have difficulty with is, as he stated, we have so many things to teach, okay, that they really are trying to figure out how much time to spend on what. A teacher tends to go towards their strength and spend more time on the things that they're comfortable with and less time on those things that aren't. But we want to align it to what is exactly the essential skill. So, you know, again, I think that's an important point.
Absolutely.
That you're making.
Right, and I understood his explanation of it. You know, but I guess, and I understand that there's no finish line. You know, at the same time, you know, 50% of our kids meeting standard, you know, while some people call it good, I don't necessarily consider that, you know, that good. Mm-hmm. You know, we have to be able to do better than that. You know, just barely getting over 50%.
And when it's 80% proficient and advanced, we're going to say we got to do better.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So, you know, so I am.
But at the same time, as a district, we don't control. We don't have a policy that says, okay, you're only going to take in so many kids. So the other thing that affects that number is the turnover of students that he gets in ninth grade or that we had from kindergarten to sixth grade. That transition, you're not looking at things that are cohorts for the most
right.
part. You're looking at different students, perhaps, or different numbers.
I understand that. And that's just part of every district has
right.
to do that.
Yep.
And everybody, you know, is in the same boat when it comes to that. I understand that completely.
Yep.
But I'm just trying to get an idea on, you know, we hear a lot of these same things every time, you know, what our strengths are, what's not working, and exactly what's going to be changed, rather than that's all I'm trying to do is get a handle on that. So I don't
sure.
understand.
And just to let you know, Mike, that basically the focus this year is going to be on the top three to get that in place. That's what we're going to try to accomplish with the Edgenuity training, with the time we can give the teachers. And then next year, Edgenuity, there's a good possibility they'll come back and they're going to work more specifically with us on instructional strategies. You know, so we'll still improve the bottom three or four, but we really want to get the skeleton in place so that we're ready to move on to the next level.
And I guess, you know, the question I had about teaching was when you see the differences like in the math scores.
Mm-hmm.
You know, okay, did we lose or have, you know, did Jaime Escalante get here and then leave after a year? Or, you know, what happened, you know, with our math scores when we were high or when we, you know what I mean, and that, those kinds of things. And
right.
so, you know, we really don't have a handle on that when we see that mm-hmm. you know, we lost our best teachers for whatever reason.
Mm-hmm.
And as this evolves and gets better, we will have much more of a handle on it. And that's one of the advantages of common assessments is that also as administrators, we can look at the results of those common assessments and we can more easily find out where we have weaknesses and where we need to go in and give support and help coach teachers to be the best they can be. So it also empowers us to look at those, not in an evaluative way that's going to threaten them, but in a way that, okay, we're struggling here. We need to get in there and provide support in one way or another. So that's also some of the power of that.
Yeah, the second thing is it's a good thing you have grading on here because you mentioned grades is one of the ways that you judge whether or not it is, but yet you also said later on that you were getting kids from private school or districts that you thought were really good,
mm-hmm.
that, you know, their scores were A and B's and couldn't do it.
Yeah.
You know, and, you know, that's, you know, for me, that's one of the hardest things to get a handle on is the grading. Because, you know, everybody had someone in high school that, you know, you didn't want to be in his math class because he graded on a curve.
Yep.
You know, while the other one you wanted to be in because, you know, he didn't know if you were there or not. So, you know, I mean, you know, there was that kind of fluctuation in the kinds of grading that take place.
Absolutely. And I'll tell you where a lot of people fail is they don't have common grading. Because all of that can fall apart without the common grading. That's also the toughest sell to the teachers, though. But I think we can get it done. But, you know, you're absolutely right. The bottom line is if you're giving common exams, you have to make sure that they're scoring them commonly, that the tests have the same base. It doesn't have to be lockstep, but it has to be a close range of the final grade. We have to know that if a student had Mr. Spence for geometry or Mr. Gotro or Mr. Louie, a B means a B, an A means an A. Because we also use that for placement. The colleges, that's totally what they use for placement. And that will then isolate for us where our strengths and weaknesses are. So that's a huge part. And without that, the rest of it's not nearly as strong. I think that's the glue that holds it all together. Also, the toughest sell for the teachers. It takes trust. It takes some time. But we'll get there.
Yeah, and you know, and you brought up some of the math stuff. And, you know, Mrs. Liz Castillo referred to a policy that we had. You know, of course, we didn't have a board policy saying you can't go from this class to that class. That's a cultural thing, you know, that gets developed somehow,
at
you know, somewhere.
Thing?
Someone decides something, and that becomes a cultural practice, and that's just the way it is. We've had those discussions, you know, when we first were dealing with algebra in eighth grade. Mm-hmm. I mean, there was a lot of resistance to even offering it to anybody, you know, in eighth grade. And so, you know, I mean, obviously, I don't know how you deal with those cultural practices that the board doesn't, you know, we find out about them every once in a while, you know, but we don't know about them because, you know, they're just passed on in oral history, you know, to the next person who filled a slot. And so I don't know how you deal with some of those. And that's grading's part of that, too.
Sure. And there's a lot of culture, and some of it's good, and some of it we need to look at, and we need to move things along. And as you know, the high school's a harder animal to move than any other level, but that's why you're paying us the big bucks, right?
Okay. We'll see.
Other questions? Okay,
thank you very much.
I would be remiss if I didn't recognize and introduce Miss Louie, who came this evening, Miss Windemith, Melanie Clark, our ASB director, Mr. Seaman, who a lot of kids still think is the principal.
And
we've got some of our distinguished students who I imagine are here doing extra credit for somebody.
Good. And you have Greg back there.
Oh, I'm sorry. Greg, I didn't see it. Mr. Greg Perez, our dean. I'd also be remiss if I didn't say that we've got some great people at West Covina High School, and I'm sure you know this. When I first came in, you wouldn't believe the apprehension, the anxiety of the teaching staff over the fact that API went down a couple points from last year. They're beside themselves, you know, which I thought was great. I found myself in the role of telling them, guys, don't worry about it. You know, we're going to do these things, and it's going to take care of itself. No problem. I was being the soothing one instead of the one that had to put a fire under their fannies, which that's a good thing. You know, so you've got people that truly care about what's going on, truly care about the perception of the community, and truly care about the results of these kids. So, you know, that's the main hurdle you have to cross, and we've got that one crossed. So the rest will take care of itself. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay, the next item on our agenda is a report of action taken in closed session. It was moved by George Fuller, seconded by Cami Polos, and approved to expel student number 186365 for violation of Education Code 48900, subsection C and K, a possession of marijuana. The vote was 3-0 with two absents, Mr. Spence and Mr. Cox. The pupil is expelled and will not be eligible to reapply for admission until the date set in his rehabilitation plan. It was moved by George Fuller, seconded by Cami Polis, to readmit student 115220. The terms and conditions of expulsion have been met, and she's reapproved for readmission to West Covina Unified. The vote was 3-0 with two absent, Mr. Spence and Mr. Cox. I do not have a report. Is there another board member who has a report? Seeing none.
Good evening, everyone. I just want to say that we are just done with our 6-week grading period as of 2 weeks ago, And last week we had our very first class recycling competition on campus, and we were able to bring in a total of 20,000 cans and bottles, raising $800 for our campus. Yeah, and that money will go to our campus beautification committee to make sure our campus is beautiful. So anything that needs fixing, that money will do. And the juniors were able to win that competition, bring in 6,435 bottles. We are now currently finding grants for more recycling bins on our campus, and we are in the Coca-Cola competition. It's a very competitive one. All this week and next week are college application workshops with counselors helping us and making sure the seniors are successful with that because we want to go to college. And Thursday is our registration deadline for our PSAT, and I believe about 200 students did pay for that, and they're taking that this Saturday. And next Friday is our homecoming day. And that is our rally. And most importantly, we have our barbecue at 4:30 to 6:30. So all Trojans, Spartans, and Bulldogs are welcome to catch up with their alumni friends. And we're also playing a football game that same night against Roland, which we are going to win. And
why show up?
And Saturday, the 25th, is our Red Ribbon Pancake Breakfast. That is our Rotary and Interact Club hosting that, and it's just a promotion for anti-drug and a healthy living style. And that night we have our homecoming dance. And that's my report.
Thank you. I have not received any blue cards to address the board. Is there anybody in the audience who would like to address the board? Seeing none, we will move on to the business session. Are there any items a board member would like to remove from consent?
5 and 6, please.
Any items a board member would like to add to consent?
13. 3 and 13. 3. Doesn't want to let him get up and say the little
that's
steal.
Good. That's good. Okay.
Do I have a motion?
I'll move as amended.
Second. Can you tell me, I want to clarify the number.
They are adding 3 and 13, removing 5 and 6.
5 and 6?
Yes. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries 5-0. Okay, next item on the agenda is number 4. Ms. Lace Castillo.
Thank you. This is our quarter report. Mr. Seaman, do you have anything new to add? Okay. We have not had any Williams lawsuit settlement complaints.
Okay, then we will move on to item number 5.
We have the revised, and I see C is Kelly McKinnon and Associates.
Mm-hmm.
They do a comprehensive functional behavior assessment. Not to exceed $4,000. My question is, at that amount of money, can we train somebody in the district to fulfill this?
Unfortunately, this is ordered by the court that the student and the parent get to choose based on an order that followed a due process, and the judge also put the amount up to an amount. And so we have both the person and up to the amount that was asked for per the due process, judge.
Okay, but do we have anybody in the district? If they had decided, no. My question is, if in the future, can we train somebody that they might be able to choose from, or we might be able to use before we get to this?
These are usually outside consultant types. I agree with George that it would be much better if we had a person that we could train. But because in situations like this is an expertise that is rather extensive, we have psychologists who have general information, but we don't have the extent to which when something is as serious as this that someone would be considered an expert. These consultants make quite a bit of money on their expertise. And Ms. Pickett, is there anything you want to add to that?
I'm just going to say they're usually an independent entity, so they don't show partiality on either side.
I guess what I'm saying is, like, I know one district is training its psychologists, paying for them to go become BICAs themselves so that they don't have to go to the outside consultant. Although in this case, it may not be applicable anyway.
Yeah.
But and it's just something that passes mind. So if we were...
Do I have a motion?
I move to approve.
I have an item on this one.
Mr. Spence?
Yeah, item number B, Glenn Collard, for consultant services for the upcoming WASC visit. You know, he's clearly qualified, having been 40 years as a principal, where I'm sure he dealt with a lot of WASC-type things, which brings up the question about why, when we have our principal do the WASC stuff for our staff at that site.
As part of the WASC report this last time that Coronado went through this process, there were some issues that the people who came out and visited recommended a third party be involved in it. For example, I met with them and they asked why I could not put a – the teachers requested during the WASC that the district put a full-time sub for any – person who had to leave, or just a person on the site for the site. And I said that no, we couldn't afford that. The other thing that they asked was for three more campus aides. And for whatever reason, the team that came out felt that the teachers at Coronado needed a third party to resolve some of the issues, and that if we had agreed to have that happen, that, you know, they would then come back and visit us in 2 years and let us know how we were doing. But it was a real difficult WASC in the sense that they did not want to hear anything about limiting funds or any such thing. And because of that, we felt that rather than put the new principal and the teachers to try to solve some of the differences that they're having in terms of the WASC report, that we would bring a third party in to do that.
Well, this would have been the old principal, not the new principal.
Yeah, same issue. Same issues, because basically it's a district thing that they would like someone to come and tell them. Okay, for example, right, what school Coronado size has a full-time sub sitting on their campus? If I say none, they say, we don't believe it. And so the WASC felt that the credibility of the district in working with those teachers would be better, again, with a third party involved, and that's why we ended up with this.
And, of course, WASC is going to give us the $18,000 for it.
I would hope that they won't.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, $18,000 would pay for an aide for the year. You know, so I mean,
I don't know. It won't.
Yeah, it would for a campus aid for that amount of time. I mean, part time, obviously. But I mean, I just it seems odd that, you know, we'd be hiring a third party consultant to be dealing for preparing for a WASC visit. You know.
Also, just note that this is not to exceed. We're hoping to get through most of the issues before then. But I have to tell you, there was a gentleman who you all know very well, principal of that school, Archie, what was his last name?
Newton.
Mr. Newton was very close to the WASC accreditation people. And Wally left, but he could tell you that since that time, it's been very difficult in working through some of the issues of a continuation school. And it's been a constant challenge. So rather than put the new principal in the position to deal with that, we felt it was best to give him some help.
Well, you know, I don't know if this helps or not, but I would be happy to go and tell staff they can't have those things. I'd be willing to do it.
You'd do it for free, wouldn't you?
Well, I mean,
the smile.
I mean, if we had, a full-time sub. If we were going to do the full-time sub thing, you would do it at a big school like the high school.
Of course.
I mean, where you're going to end up with at least one absence, you know, every time.
Absolutely.
If we were going to do that.
Absolutely. But well, the head of the WASC thought that was a very reasonable request, and she told him that.
Okay. Do I have a second?
I'll second it.
All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Motion carries 4-1. Next item is 6, Mr. Fuller.
I asked this on the, I guess, the third paragraph down or the second paragraph down, the parents of the student. I've asked, let me verify if some of these students are over 18 and they have requested that they receive the waiver.
Yeah. Mr. Fuller, you make a very good point. Most of the ed codes refer to students as if they're all under 18.
Right.
But we do know that anyone who is 18, not just for this reason, but for any other reason, that they do either request for themselves or sign for themselves. And so we've adjusted the form to do that.
I appreciate that.
Thank you for mentioning it. Question?
No. I'll move.
I'll second it.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries 5-0. Okay. Any further Board of Education discussion?
Yes, if I may. I was very pleased. I have heard from others and very pleased to hear tonight from Mrs. Lace Castile on the commitment to expanding our capabilities with the web page and things that communication devices throughout the district as well as the high school. It would be very nice to get a grade. And
I'm especially grateful that Mr. Ruben Frutos heard it all.
it would be great to have streaming video of board meetings.
Yes, thank you for that. Thank you. So noted.
Yeah, let's take note that first thing was an audio stream.
Well, that works too.
Before we can get our grades.
Okay, dates to remember. October 28th is our next Board of Education meeting. There being no further business, this meeting is adjourned at 8:30.